What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. And man, I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very prolific keyboardist, producer, and musician. He is a musical genius and an innovator when it comes to composing, producing, and performing on the keyboards. And he is, in my opinion, one of the top keyboardists of all time. Please put your hands together and welcome keyboardist, producer, and musician, Jeff Lorber. How's it going, Jeff?
All right, thank you. Wow, that's quite an introduction. I'm going to have to work hard to live up to that one, I think.
Oh, man. Man, you've done it, believe me. Thank you. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for appearing on my show and chopping up with me, man. It's a real honor because, you know, I kind of look at you as my Obi-Wan Kenobi for keyboarders, amongst others, man. And, you know, I just put you on such a high level from the work that you've done. And, you know, it's not easy being a keyboardist, you know, retaining a full vocabulary of chords and progressions and things, man. And you're just displaying what it means to me as being a top keyboardist, man. So hats off to you.
Wow, thank you very much.
You know, Jeff, before we get into the questions, man, I just want to talk about one of your throwback tracks you did with Gerald Albright off his Groovology CD back in 2002, Ain't No Stoppin'.
Right.
Oh, man, that was a hot track, man. You know, I'm going to tell you why. It has a lot of the elements that I use in my own music. You know, a lot of major 7 over 9 chords, augmented chord progressions, and, it, you know, within the minor scale. And, you know, those variations of chord progressions and arrangements, man, just really stood out to me in the track, man. And it, plus, it was in D minor. I love D minor to play in, too. So, you know, it was immediately, man, I just gravitated and I just jumped on the board and just wanted to play along with you guys side by side. So, high track.
Actually,
man.
You know, that song really stands out because that's a very unusual song because we wrote that. Both of us play, you know, Gerald, of course, is known for being an alto saxophone player. I'm known as for being a keyboard player, but Gerald is an outstanding bass player.
Yes.
And he plays bass on all of his, most of his records, and, you know, he's a fantastic bass player. And I play some guitar. I wouldn't say that I'm outstanding, but I have a couple of funky blues licks that I can play. And we actually wrote that song with Gerald when, you know, the basic idea for the song somehow came up. Gerald was playing bass and I was playing guitar, so that was sort of very unusual for us. I don't think we've ever written anything else like that.
Wow. Yeah. Again, man, it's funky, it's melodic, and it sticks with me, especially on the eighth bar chord change, man. You really took it to another direction on there, and it just took me to another level when I heard it, man.
Well, you know, Gerald and I go way back. I was a big fan of his, I heard him play with Patrice Rushen. Of course, I'm a Patrice Rushen fan, and I think he must have been about 17 or something when he played on Forget Me Nots. He played on that the saxophone solo.
Oh wow! Didn't know that. No.
and then he was actually when he left. He actually played sax with me for a while in the early '80s. So we go way back, and we just have sort of a, you know, just a rapport because we've known each other for so long, and I think we enjoy a lot of the same music, and we kind of come from the same place, even though I grew up in Philadelphia and he grew up in LA, but musically we're very close, and whenever we make music together, it's pretty fun.
Fire, right. You know, I talk about a lot too in my shows, man, you know, the bond between relationships with musicians, having that great chemistry in the lab, you know, really turns out on the tracks and on stage. So yeah, great display of that.
That's sort of what it's like. It's like usually even though you know, musicians might be different ages or grow up in different places, I mean, a lot of us generally we like a lot of the same things. We sort of grew up listening to a lot of the same music, and have, so there's rarely, like when I get together with Gerald or other musicians of that stature, there's rarely a lot of like disagreements about anything. It's sort of like we're all, you know, we all kind of have the same point of view, and we're all after the same thing more or less, which is you know, obviously musical excellence, but you know, the virtues of writing music that is challenging and interesting harmonically and rhythmically,
right?
And melodically, of course.
Oh, definitely. You know, now you got a new CD that's coming out on June 1st, and it's titled "Now Is the Time." And, you know, I had a chance to listen to the whole CD, Jeff, and it's just phenomenal, man. My favorite track on there right now currently is Rain Dance, Wanna Fly. Hot track, man. It, you know, it kind of threw me back. There was a old hip-hop group from back in the day, Junior Mafia, man. They had another track like that called Crush on You with the same type of groove.
I recorded the song Rain Dance in 1980 on the Water Sign album.
Yeah.
And Crush on You was basically, they basically sampled that.
Wow, that so that was your composition?
Yeah.
Oh, that was mine. No way, man. That's phenomenal.
And this is the first time I've sort of remade it, but like the thing that really was inspirational was Irene Bauza, who's singing on there. She did a version where she didn't sample it exactly, but she used, you know, my chords and my groove, and she wrote that song, I Wanna Fly, and that came out on her album, which you know, it's not real well known or anything, but I heard it and I just loved it. So when I did this Jeff Lorber Fusion, sort of this new record, I knew I had to do a version of that song and include Irene's vocals and her lyric and melody in there because I liked it so much.
Man, the melody, Jeff, stood out. I mean, even what they did, but I was more interested into the composition and the melody and chords within the Junior Mafia's version. I didn't really care about the lyrics too much. It was those chord progressions that really stood out to me. You know, again, a lot of the major 7 or 9 and the augmented chords that you're throwing in there, and it has the Fender Rhodes, and it's really warm sounding, and man, it's one of my favorite tracks and compositions that you've done, and I'm just honored to know that you've done the original composition.
Yeah, it's sort of, I mean, the chords are a little bit like the standard Sunny, you know, it's kind of like that, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I noticed also on your the track, the Curtains Before We Go, on the new song, man, there's an intro, the very beginning of that intro of that song, there's a solo sign type of patch that you're using on that, man. It kind of has like a pearmental arise onto it, and you know, it just sounds real hot. And is that something that you programmed on your own, or is that a patch sound
from
somewhere else?
What that is actually that's a mini Moog that was just you know, I overdubbed 3 different parts, and it was like 3-part harmony. And so there's 3 different, there's like a little line that's harmonized in 3 parts.
Wow.
And like the first time I heard something like that, the guy that really did a lot of work like that back in the 80s was Larry Dunn, especially on the Ronnie Laws records. And I always loved that sound. And I don't think you can get that sound if you just try to take a polyphonic synthesizer and you try to play that. It's got to be sort of recorded one note at a time using a monophonic synthesizer with the expression that you have from that.
Wow. Yeah,
that's,
I agree.
Cool that you noticed that, because that's sort of an interesting little spot on that song.
Yeah, I'm really into tones and patches and things, and things that usually captivate and really gravitate to the sound, man. I'm usually on to like, man, what is that?
So. Yeah, I was going to, it's funny because I have, you know, pretty much everything that I record is either a live musician playing a regular instrument, or, you know, I do use synthesizers, but I don't use, I don't think I'm hardly using any plugins of any sort at all on this record. You know, most of what you hear is real Rhodes, real piano, real bass, real drums. And I think, you know, that's just a classic sound, and it doesn't age, it doesn't ever sound dated, you know, when you record like that.
Yeah.
And it also has a lot of dimension and depth.
Yes.
And I have this friend of mine, I was playing him some stuff I was working on, and he works in Reason, he works with a lot of plug-in stuff, and he was saying, man, how do you get that sound? I said, well, the first thing I do is I always just use real instruments, and that's it. I never use any, you know, I shouldn't say I never use plug-ins, because I do use plug-ins, but on this record, there's hardly any plug-ins. I was almost going to, like, put, like, a little thing on the record that says, like, no plug-ins used on this record, but... I really think that helps, is to use the real, you know, real instruments with good microphones, and also recording at 96K. That's another thing I think it helps a little bit too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I also saw you, speaking of remakes, man, you did bring out Chinese Medicinal Purposes on your new CD. You did. I mean, that was back on your Jeff Lorber's Fusion album for like 77, and you
brought the remake. Yeah, that's very obscure, but it's a cool song. I'm looking forward. You know, we're going to, in about a week from now, I'm going to be in Europe with basically the band that's on this record, and that's one of the songs we're going to play, and I'm really looking forward to it. It should be really, really fun.
Oh, that should be a great live song to play. You know, man, you know, for I want to just kind of jump into the interview. Back up just a little bit, Jeff, man. You know, I'm just really excited for you being on the show, man. Give me a little bit of background of how you went and you started in the music business and evolving to this, you know, seasoned musician that's, you know, producing countless hit albums, man.
Well, you know, one thing that I think anybody that has any exposure to the music business or even just entertainment business in general, probably, I guess, is that there's no, you know, there's no easy way to find success. You know, everybody finds their own path, and it's usually a unique path. It's not like, you know, if you want to be a doctor, you just go to medical school and you graduate and you get a job, and then that's pretty much it. You know, that's it's much more straightforward for other professions than the music business. You just got to sort of, every person has to find their own way. But the way I found my way was basically, I mean, the main thing was I always loved music. And there was always music around my house when I was a little kid. My mother played piano. I had two older sisters that were studying music, and so I wanted to get into it, see what all the fun was about. And also I had some cousins that were into music. One in particular was really into jazz. You know, I grew up in the 60s, and folk music was really big back then. I had some cousins that were into that, but this one cousin was into jazz, and obviously, you know, I mean, I thought the folk music was okay, but when I heard the jazz, you know, that's what I really was much more interested in. It was like, later for you folk guys, man. I'm not going to hang with you cats. Not that I don't appreciate some of that music, but yeah. But my cousin Stuart had a drum set in his basement, and then they had a real nice like hi-fi stereo at their house, and they had it hooked up where he could play records upstairs, and there were speakers upstairs where his drums were.
Okay.
So, you know, that was the coolest thing ever, and he would let me play. You know, there's nothing more fun for a little kid than playing drums.
Sure.
So Oh, but anyway, no, you asked me how did I get into the music business. So anyway, I just always, I always just love music. And when I was in high school, I played in bands. And it just seemed, I just always, you know, I just kind of like had fun playing, and I liked to play with other people. And I just had a real, and then I went to music school, Berklee College of Music.
Wow.
And that was really lucky because that's a good place to go to school. It's sort of vocational training school. They teach you real practical stuff that you can really use to get a job or, you know, work in modern music.
Right.
Unlike other music schools that are, you know, more on the classical tip. And, you know, it's not as oriented towards modern contemporary music as Berklee is. So that was one thing that was great about Berklee.
Sure.
And then I ended up living in Portland, Oregon, and I started my little fusion band, the Jeff Lorber Fusion. We started to make some noise, and we got this little record deal on this little label called Intercity out of New York, and put out a couple records for them. I mean, it was a different time. You know, it was a lot easier for little unknown artists to kind of make a splash somehow, I think.
Sure.
Back in those days.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it wasn't as easy to sort of, I mean, it wasn't as hard to kind of get through the clutter of, like, all the advertising and, you know, it was sort of easier for somebody to kind of jump out of nowhere and make a little bit of noise and get something going.
Right.
And then I was very lucky that I got signed to Arista Records. I made six records for them, with, you know, working with Clive Davis, who obviously, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
And, although one of the things that he recommended that I should do, which happened sort of at the end of my tenure there at Arista, was to, you know, get more into R&B and vocals, which is something I always liked. But I think in the long run, maybe that wasn't like the best thing for me to do, rather than just kind of sticking more to the instrumental stuff that I started out with.
Sure. You know, you're known for playing on synthesizers and Fender Rhodes and Wurlitzers, Jeff, and those are a lot of the sounds that I've kind of really got into your style of keyboard playing. What was it about those instruments that got your attention, man? Was it the sounds and patches, you know, versus the non-traditional piano type of acoustic sounds? I mean, did it really kind of take your mind to another level, or was it the feel of the actual keys that you got onto the keyboards playing?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was just talking to one of my friends the other day, and we were talking about how there were a number of years there where every 6 months or every 9 months or a year, there'd be like a new synthesizer with new sounds, you know, like, you know, the first came out, a lot of the analog stuff and ARP, and then, you know, like the D50 and the DX7 and,
oh, yeah,
and then the M1, and it seemed like every year there was like new, really, really cool synthesized sounds. Unfortunately, like over the last few years, or maybe even like 10 or 15 years, there really haven't been that much of interesting things going on with sound. You know, everything's sort of leveled out, kind of plateaued, I guess,
right,
to a point where there's a lot of cool sounds out there, but it's not like...
jaw-dropping, you know, I've never heard that
exactly
before. Yeah.
It's just sort of reached a point where... You know, there's very little innovation going on. It's just people, you know, it's kind of gotten to a point where there's a bunch of sounds that everybody uses, and synthesizer manufacturers make those available. But, you know, one thing that happened to me a number of years ago was, you know, in the process of doing that, of course, everybody would sell their Rhodes and sell their Mini Moog and buy the D50 and buy the M1 and buy the Motif, and, you know, then they wouldn't have that old stuff around anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, I had an experience where I went over to this friend of mine's house, and he had a Wurlitzer, and I just couldn't believe how great it sounded, how soulful it was, and how warm and rich the sound was. It was sort of like, you know, that was the moment that sort of made me really want to return to my roots of just playing those sort of more keyboards from the 60s. And of course, I love playing acoustic piano too. I mean, that's a big part of what I do.
Right.
But that seems to be the most expressive and the most soulful keyboards out there that really work to play melodies and to play solos and stuff, is, you know, the traditional keyboards of B3, Wurlitzer, Rhodes, and piano. I mean, that seems to be it for the most part, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because, you know, even when I play, when I'm composing, I'm always starting on my Fender Rhodes. Well, I don't have an acoustic Fender Rhodes. I'm using a virtual library by Scarby, which is phenomenal. If you haven't heard it, man, it's just really nice virtual.
Yeah, I've heard about it. I know a lot of people like that.
Yeah, you know, and it's just, you know, I get more creative when I hear more warmer tone progression than something cold as a piano, and, you know, when I'm playing, so, yeah. Since you're not using a lot of software VSTs, is there anything out there that's kind of catching your ear right now to kind of play along with your track?
Well, I use a lot of software when it comes to, I'm spending most of my day looking at a Pro Tools screen.
Okay.
So, I mean, when it comes to recording, it's all software, and it's all Pro Tools, and for me, it's very much Waves plugins, you know, and I'm lucky I managed to get their Mercury bundle, which is... sort of like when you buy that, you kind of get almost everything that they make, and when they buy when they make new stuff, you get that too. So and they keep coming out with new stuff.
Yeah, Waves is phenomenal.
Cool. Yeah, like the new software they have is sort of like mixing for dummies. They have these plugins. It's like the Chris Lord Alge plugin or the
Tony Maserati. Yeah,
the Maserati plugin. And it just has like these really basic controls, like bass, treble.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
More reverb, more delay.
Good knobs.
That's all. Yeah, but you know, but it has like some kind of like EQ curves and a general sort of contour for these different things that you can set it for, whether it's, you know, kick drum or snare or bass guitar or electric guitar or whatever.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Vocal. And sometimes you just put that thing on and it sounds really good, you know, just like right away. It's like, wow.
Right.
Another thing that I use a lot, like a whole lot, is I really like the guitar effects plugins that Waves makes. You know, that it just creates like a little virtual pedal board of like a compressor, delay, chorus.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's it for the most part, or a panner. You know, that's what I use for my road sound for the most part. Is I just take my my Rhodes, which is a real Rhodes, and I record it in mono. Then I put it into those effects, and the effects have it has stereo vibrato in the effects that is timed to the track, which is better than, you know, it's like easier than trying to figure it out using the analog controls on the Fender Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's easier to edit when it's just a mono track compared to like
stereo
recording
file.
In stereo.
Yeah. Now, what external mic pre's are you using on all of your channels, your signal chains?
Well, I have an API preamp, and I'd say, besides when I'm tracking a full band in here, which obviously, you know, I have an SSL board too, and I'm using the board a lot, and you know, I have to, when I'm putting a rhythm section in here, you know, that's kind of straining, you know, everything I got going here, needless to say. But when I'm just recording like one instrument at a time, like 80% of the time I go through my API preamp.
Wow.
That's it. It's just, I don't go through the board. I mean, I do sometimes go through the board. I get lazy and I just like, I just go through the board. But, you know, most of the time it goes through the API and it works great.
Sure. You know, for your...
I have a knee preamp too, and I use that also.
Oh yeah, knees are always nice to throw in. You know, they have some really nice color to it. A couple of buddies of mine are using it, and you know, they swear by it. So
yeah, they're both. You know, I mean, the SSL signal chain is definitely not bad either. Unfortunately, the board I have is very old, and so certain channels sometimes they get a little scratchy or something. You know, like I got, you know, I don't know if all the contacts are as good as they should be, but I know pretty much for sure when I patch stuff straight into that API and then straight into Pro Tools, usually it's like clean as a whistle. There's never any noise whatsoever on those tracks.
Nice. You know, for your compositions, Jeff, are there any specific methods that you use when composing for yourself and other artists, or you kind of just play it by ear and really zone together as a team in the studio?
I guess, you know, the real secret to success for me in terms of writing is to just kind of always be on the lookout for good ideas and for something that really gets you excited, because that's sort of the motor that fuels the creative process. If all of a sudden you get some kind of idea that that wow, I'd really love to hear this, you know, whatever that is, you know, and sometimes I'll hear a groove or a rhythm or something, and it'll be like some kind of pop music or rap or R&B or something, but a lot of times, I mean, a lot of the music that you hear harmonically isn't very interesting, as you know.
Right.
So sometimes I'll hear some kind of groove, and I'll think to myself, I wonder what that groove would sound like if you actually put really cool chords on top of it.
Yes.
Just like D minor chord.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's more expression should be going on within that track.
So once in a while, it's like something like that kind of gets me going, you know?
Right.
But yeah, basically, you just got to kind of always be on the lookout for those ideas. And when you find those ideas, those really inspirational ideas, something that really, you know, something that you want to hear, you kind of like... have this idea, man, I'd really like to hear this, whatever it is. I'd like to, you know, and then, you know, you make it happen, and then you get excited about it, and a lot of times the excitement that you put into the track, when you write the track, it's infectious, you know, you play that track for somebody, and they can hear the excitement in the track, and then they get excited too, and they want to be part of it.
Definitely. You know, I got to ask you, Jeff, from one keyboard to another, is there anything specific that you still practice daily, you know, as far as runs, progressions, or are you the type of keyboardist where you just really get into the writing and composing of track and kind of just get your chops, you know, unrusted out when you're creating? I should put it that way.
Well, I mean, I don't always succeed, but I try to remind myself to practice all the time, especially if I have a gig coming up, because there's nothing worse than you know, getting up on stage and you want to play something and your hands don't want to do it. So that's a terrible feeling. So I never want to be like that. So yeah, I try to always practice to some extent. Usually I'm practicing the songs that I'll be playing live. You know, I make TV tracks for myself, which means it's got like everything in the track except for the piano part.
Your solos, okay.
And then I can play to that. And sometimes I'll actually kind of edit my Pro Tools files to create TV tracks that will really, really extend some solo sections or something like that. So I can play on it, instead of playing on it for 2 minutes, I can play on it for 10 minutes or something.
Nice.
So I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I do that a lot. I compose a track and, you know, just a rough track where I can, you know, just have some basic foundation chords, and I just run my solos over it at different tempos, different rhythm structures, just so I can play differently on different things. So, yeah, I hear you there.
You know, another thing that I do really often is when I listen to music, whether it's my own library or just I'm on the street and I hear some music or whatever, I'm always trying to analyze it harmonically. I'm always trying to listen to it and figure out what the chord structure is. And by doing that, that gives me a lot of ideas, because sometimes I'll hear some kind of chord change that'll really be inspiring to me. It's like, wow, that's really cool the way they did that, you know, the way they put that together.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because most music, most popular music, is very simple. You know, there's not that much that's... you know, most of it you can just listen to it and you can figure it out real fast, but sometimes
totally.
You can't, you know.
Yeah.
But I get a lot from, you know, listening to other musicians who I admire, you know, listening to Weather Report and Joe Zawinul and Jaco and Wayne, or listening to Pat Metheny, or listening to Ravel, you know, the stuff that he writes, or Bach. You know, no matter what I'm listening to, I try to analyze it harmonically. I try to understand it. I try to understand what it is about it that makes me, you know, enjoy it.
Sure.
It's sort of like taking an X-ray. It's like if you were an architect and you walk by a house. If you listen to the music and you analyze the structure harmonically, it's kind of like seeing the blueprint right in front of you.
That gives you a lot of
knowledge, you know, about how things work. So.
Also helps the ear,
I'm
too.
I'm always trying to think that way.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, you know, like you say, listening, man, I talk a lot about, you know, having strengthening the ear of listening, what's going on within the tracks. And, you know, sometimes as a beginner, when you're playing, you're hearing the bass, the drums, everything's coming in at once. But, you know, as your ear progresses, you'll be able to kind of focus in on one instrument at a time and focus on the notes and the solos at a time. So, yeah, I hear you. That's a great philosophy, man.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because, you know, it's funny, I can remember when I was younger and I would listen to stuff and I'd hear it and it would be, you know, when I was listening, maybe I was like 18 years old, and when I was first listening to Herbie and Chick and stuff they were doing, you know, like a record like Tones for Jones Bones or,
yeah.
You know, or Empyrean Isles or, you know, Herbie Taken Off or some of the stuff that he did with Miles. And it just was so far beyond me.
Right.
And I wanted so bad to understand what they were doing, you know?
Yeah.
And now I can listen to it. It's not like, I'm not trying to say I understand it all now, but I certainly have way more insight into it now than I did back then.
Oh, totally. And, he kind of slowed things down a little bit.
And so it's just funny how you go through those stages of your life. But I can remember, like, being young and just, wow, I really, really so much wish I could understand what those guys are doing.
Right.
And it was like one of the first guys that I ever listened to that I really could understand, I could just listen to it and I could pretty much figure it out pretty quickly, was Horace Silver. He was definitely one of my big influences. And his music, you know, it's got a real simplicity to it. But it's very good too. I mean, it's very funky. He's got fantastic rhythms, chords,
sure,
and you know, just the structures of everything and the energy behind it and the spirit behind it. You know, there's nothing like Horace Silver, and so that's sort of where I started. Was sort of listening to that, or listening to some of that early Ramsey Lewis stuff. I could understand that. And then eventually, you know, I kind of made my way through it to begin to understand you know, some of those things that were much more complicated, like the advanced stuff that Herbie and Chick were playing.
Oh yeah, their vocabulary for chords and progressions and runs is just limitless. You know, when I hear them, it's different every time. You know, and you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, you get so excelled at as a musician, you can get away with just pure mere talent. So yeah, the guys are never sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's on the musical agenda for 2010, Jeff? What do you have on the music radar for production and also the new release of your CD?
Well, yeah, my record comes out in about, I guess, 10 days, something like that. June 1st.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just looking forward to getting out there and letting people know about it and playing this music. And, you know, I think it's good timing because, you know, this record is, it's not a smooth jazz record. It's a fusion record.
Yeah.
And, it's got some real exciting, more virtuoso kind of stuff on it. It's real fun to play. And
yeah. Like Mysterious Traveler. That's another one that's real hot, man.
Yeah. And I think people are ready for that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just glad to be, you know, it just seems like the right thing at the right time, and already there seems to be some excitement about it, so I'm glad to see that.
Excellent. Well, Jeff, it's been a pleasure having you on my show, man. I would love to have you back and talk about your new endeavors, man. You definitely got a spot here at the Producer's Corner.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Nice talking to you. Bye.
And a big shout out to Jeff Lorber for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. It's always a pleasure for me to speak to my musician heroes, Jeff Lorber being one of them, George Duke, Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea. The list just goes on and on, man. I just look up to these guys as well-seasoned players, and, you know, just to have that one-on-one time with them, you know, it's truly inspirational, and again, it's a true honor. And for more information on Jeff Lorber, you can hit his website up, man, at www.lorber.com, and that's spelled LORBER.com. And he also has a MySpace page at www.myspace.com/Jeff Lorber Jazz. And again, that's myspace.com/Jeff Lorber Jazz. And for my past and current interviews, I also have a MySpace page as well at www.myspace.com/Spud's New Zone. And I also have a iTunes podcast, so if you have a computer or an iPhone, you can go to the iTunes store and type in the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, or just the Producer's Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up at spudtootight@gmail.com. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track play out in the background, man. And it's by Jeff Lorber. And the title of it is called Black Ice. I know you guys are digging it, man. So I'm just going to let that finish out and close out the show. And until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.